to shepherd the church of God that he obtained with the blood of his own son. Paul called to himself the elders. He describes them as having been appointed to be overseers or bishops or guardians. All three of those words are used to translate the Greek word. And he says further that their job is to shepherd or to pastor the flock, that is, the church. And then in Titus chapter 1, verse 5, Paul says, I left you behind in Crete for this reason, that you should put in order what remained to be done and should appoint elders in every town as I directed you. And then as he gives the description of what persons were to be appointed as elders, he says, for a bishop, as God's steward, must be blameless. Elders have certain qualifications. For each elder is a bishop or an overseer, and he is a steward, managing God's household. And then in 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. Now, as an elder myself and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, as well as one who shares in the glory to be revealed, I exhort the elders among you to tend the flock of God that is in your charge, exercising the oversight. Peter, an elder himself, addresses the elders whose task is to shepherd or to tend the flock, to pastor those in their charge, and they are to exercise the oversight. They are to be bishops. Notice that in all these verses and in others as well in the New Testament, the name or title of the leaders of the local congregation is elders. And that usage is found in the various authors of the New Testament. It's in the book of Acts, it's in Paul, and it's in Peter. There is a tendency now to prefer other terms, but the biblical title is elders. And so there is good reason that elder has been the common designation in our churches. The other terms, bishop, pastor, steward, are descriptive of aspects of the function of elders in the church. I want us to look at these words in more detail for what they tell us about the work of these men and the qualifications that are spelled out in 1 Timothy 3 and Titus 1 clearly require that they are men. The work, in turn, will tell us something about the kind of men to be chosen to perform this function in the church. So let's begin with the title proper, the term elder. And let's have the chart on the screen. Many societies through history have been led by the older men of the community. And this is true in Africa and parts of Asia today, where the village elders oversee the life of the community. And this was true in Israel in Old Testament times and continued through New Testament times. There is a reference to the elders of a local Jewish community in Luke chapter 7, verse 3, where the Roman centurion, the Roman officer in Capernaum, had heard about Jesus. And he sent some Jewish elders to him, asking him to come and heal his slave. these community elders among the Jews are the most important background to elders in Christian communities. But let's do a little bit of word study here. The Greek word is presbyteros, and it gives us our English word presbyter. And I think you can tell I have spelled the Greek word in English characters, and then I've given you the English word, and it's almost identical in the letters. So we get our word presbyter from the Greek word for an older man. And this word, in turn, gives the name to Presbyterian churches, for they are governed by councils of presbyters or elders who preside over congregations in a given area. The Latin word, which is equivalent, is the word senior. And we use it in English for senior citizens, or in an academic setting, for upperclassmen, the seniors in high school or college. And it's from this Latin word that the Spanish language gets its word señor, which is simply sir now, but it goes back to the Latin word for an older person. The meaning of this word in a non-technical sense is an older man. But the word is also most often used as the title of a recognized function. And Jewish elders had certain functions that we know from Jewish writings near the time of the New Testament. Jewish elders were older men of experience and wisdom. They decided disputes in the community. They interpreted the law and administered discipline. They preserved the traditions of the people, and they served as examples. In the New Testament, we find Christian elders had much the same functions as these Jewish community elders had. Christian elders were responsible for overseeing the affairs of the community. An instance of this is in Acts chapter 11, verse 30, where the disciples in Antioch had heard about the distress of the Christians in Jerusalem, and they determined that sending to their ability, each would send relief to the believers living in Judea. And this they did, sending it to the elders by Barnabas and Saul. So the elders in the Jerusalem church are described here as overseeing the affairs of the community, specifically receiving and administering relief funds that had been sent by a neighboring church. New Testament elders also decided disputes. An instance of this is in Acts chapter 15, where some of the Jewish believers were requiring that Gentile converts to Christ had to be circumcised. They had to become Jews before they could become Christians. And this was disturbing the church in Antioch, and it sent Paul and Barnabas and others to the Jerusalem church. And we read in Acts 15, verse 6, that the apostles and the elders met together to consider the matter. And after a description of their discussion, we read in verse 22, then the apostles and the elders, with the consent of the whole church, decided to choose men from among their members and send them to Antioch with Paul and Barnabas. So here the elders are involved in deciding a dispute in the churches. The elders also preserved the apostolic teachings. In 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 17, Paul writes, "Let the elders who rule well be considered worthy of double honor, especially those who labor in preaching and in teaching." Well, in addition to the word elder, we also find these people described by the word bishop. The Greek word here is episkopos, and it gives us our English word bishop. Now, in the case of presbyter, it's very obvious. When you transliterate it, it comes out looking very similar to the Greek word. You might think, well, what in the world does bishop have to do with episkopos? They don't look at all alike. But actually, bishop is derived from this Greek word. And it's by usual changes in semantics that it occurs. The initial vowel is dropped out. The P becomes B. P and B as labials sound very similar to each other, and they often make a transition one to the other. Then you have the I as the same. And then the SK in the English equivalent of the Greek letters gets softened in English as SH instead of SK. And then you have O and P again. And so that's how episkopos becomes bishop. Pardon this little bit of etymology. This is something that fascinates me, if it does not you. But the word episkopos, or bishop, literally means overseer. The Latin equivalent is supervisor. We know visor, vision, has to do with seeing, and super, over. So the Latin equivalent of the Greek overseer is supervisor. In educational setting, the equivalent is the word superintendent. This was primarily a secular word in the Greek world and was used of a variety of functionaries: construction foremen, supervisors of civic activities, tutors, watchmen, and guardians. In Judaism, the Qumran community that produced the Dead Sea Scrolls had a functionary whose Hebrew title, Mebaker, meant overseer, and his task included teaching and judging, handling community funds, assigning work, and examining new applicants for membership. In general, in the New Testament, elders appear in Jewish contexts, as in Acts 11:30 that we read before, and James 5, verse 14, a call for the elders of the church. The book of James is very close to the Jewish background. And the word bishops occurs in more Gentile contexts, as in Philippians chapter 1, verse 1, where Paul writes to the bishops and deacons of the church at Philippi. In 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 and 2, where the qualifications of bishops are given. Elders is most often a plural term because in Judaism they functioned as a council, as a group. And so very seldom do you get elder as an individual term. You do get it in 2 and 3 John, where a person identifies himself as an elder. But in all of the passages that are talking about these leaders of the churches, as we have seen, it is in the plural, elders. These persons function as a group more than as individuals. But bishop is more often used when an individual is in view, as in 1 Timothy 3, the bishop must be. Hence, in the early history of the church, when a single leader emerged from the presbyters in this post-apostolic church, The term used for that single leader was bishop. Well, this is a word that refers to the function of oversight, supervision. Now let's turn to a third term that Matt took as a focus of his lesson this morning, the term shepherd. From the agricultural use for the person who looked after sheep, already in the ancient Near East and in the Old Testament, the image of a shepherd was used for a king and other political leaders. And Ezekiel chapter 34 is the most extended discussion of the leaders of Israel as being shepherds. They are presented in a negative way because they were failing to do what shepherds ought to do. But this is typical of the way this agricultural term was transferred to those who were leaders in other spheres. Well, we do not have an English word from the Greek word for shepherd, poimen. So I can't do an etymology for you on that. But from the Latin word for the shepherd, we have the commonly used word pastor. Shepherd is from the Old English for a sheep herder, and the Latin equivalent is a pastor. There is a tendency today for some to prefer shepherd over elder, and this is true of Matt's usage, and my words now are not a criticism of him. We've talked about this. For shepherd is certainly a biblical image for elders, and the term is appropriate, especially in the context of an invitation where Matt so often uses it. But I suspect that for some, the preference for shepherd, and I'm not saying this is true of Matt, but I suspect that for some, the preference for shepherd is a reaction to a perceived authoritarian view of elders, and is in part a reflection of the mood of the times that we want someone to hold our hand and tell us we're fine as we are. And some of that may have have its place. But we should remember, as Matt reminded us in his sermon, what the primary task of shepherds, in a literal sense, would be. More than binding up wounds and soothing the sheep, the main tasks of shepherds were leading them to food and water and protecting them from wild animals. And so when we think of the work of elders as shepherds, let's remember what the real work of a shepherd is. Hence, in the New Testament, elders as shepherds or pastors were responsible for teaching. In Ephesians chapter 4, verse 11, the pastors and teachers are grouped together as one category in that list of those special functionaries in the church. And we've referred to 1 Timothy 5, verse 17, about the elders' work of preaching and teaching. And in the New Testament, elders have the task of protecting from false teaching. Again, Matt reminded us of that. Hebrews, Titus, chapter 1, verse 9, after the list of the qualifications, Paul states, "He, that is the bishop, the elder, must have a firm grasp of the word that is trustworthy in accordance with the teaching, so that he may be able to preach with sound doctrine, and to refute those who contradict it." So elders are bishops, and they are pastors or shepherds, a word that we do not use so often, that describes the work of these men, is that of steward. And it occurs in this Titus passage, chapter 1, verse 7, that a bishop as God's steward must be blameless. In the ancient world, the steward was a very important functionary. We do not have the exact equivalent in our world today. But in the ancient world, the steward was a trusted slave or freedman charged with managing the household affairs for the owner of that house. The English word, steward, comes from the warden of the sty, S-T-Y. Think of a pig sty. And that may be why this word is not so commonly used now. We prefer to think of ourselves as sheep rather than as pigs. But maybe we ought to use this more often as a reminder of some of our human characteristics. The church is the family of God, and elders as stewards manage the affairs of the household for the Father God. It's really His family. But stewards, elders, like the trusted slave in the ancient world, is responsible to the owner for properly carrying out and overseeing the affairs of the family. Well, let me make a few reflections now on contemporary religious usage of these words. Many of the differences in organization of different denominations come from distinguishing these offices rather than recognizing their use for the same group of men in the New Testament. Thus, Presbyterians focus on the presbytery. In Roman Catholic, Greek Orthodox, and Church of England, the bishop is distinguished from elders as a single head of a diocese. And so the Church of England in the United States is known as the Episcopal Church. But as we have seen in the New Testament, bishops and elders are the same group of men. But early in the history of the church, the bishop was distinguished from the elders. Many Protestant groups have a pastor as the lead minister of a church, and again, do not recognize it as a term for elders. Steward is less used, but it has had some currency among Methodists. Because of common denominational usage, our preachers are often called pastors, and there are pastoral aspects of their work. Just as all Christians have pastoral responsibility to fellow believers, the pastoral aspects of a minister's work comes from the fact that they are Christians, and not from the fact that they are ministers of the Word. In the New Testament, the pastors are the elders, and they are distinguished in the listing and in Ephesians 4, for example, and in other places. The pastors are distinguished from evangelists and other ministers. So it is a mistake to refer to Matt as our pastor. The pastors of our church are the elders. Matt and Justin, Evan, Brian, Alan may have pastoral aspects to their ministerial work, but that does not make them pastors any more than Otis is a pastor, because he is a faithful Christian and does the care of souls as part of our mutual responsibilities, one to another. So now, looking at these words, let me say something about the duties of elders as they come out from this terminology that is used for them. As elders, they make decisions affecting the life of the congregation. They preserve the teachings of Scripture. They administer discipline, and they serve as examples. These are the things that an elder in the ancient world was expected to do. And so elders in the church do these things. They are responsible for making decisions. They are responsible for the instruction in the church. They administer discipline, and they serve as examples. And because they are bishops, they oversee all aspects of the work of the church. They assign duties to their assistants, the deacons. The deacons are servants. They are servants of the congregation as a whole, but particularly serving under the supervision of elders. And as bishops, the elders may also assign work to other members of the church. And they represent the congregation to other people. Bishops as leaders are those to whom those on the outside look as representing the church, and they are the ones who speak on behalf of a congregation. And then again, as shepherds or pastors, the elders provide for the teaching of the church, and they protect the members from false teaching. As stewards, they manage financial affairs. Now, they may delegate specifics of these tasks to deacons or others, but the ultimate responsibility is theirs. Well, this word study has been designed to give us some guidance as to what is the work of these men. What are some of the specific tasks that they perform? But that in turn then tells us something about the kind of person wanted. And I'd like for us now to say a little bit about the characteristics, the kind of person that we want as an elder. And the work that we have described gives us a clue about this. First of all, I will mention that we want a person of wisdom and experience. This does not always come with age. But there is a certain amount of wisdom and experience that can only come with age. Someone has said there's a difference between having 20 years of experience and one experience 20 times. But unless a certain number of years have passed, there are some things that simply cannot be learned. And so the older persons may not automatically qualify as elders simply because they're aged, but age is one of the prerequisites for the kind of wisdom and experience that you want in the leader of a church. Secondly, we want a person who is capable of teaching. And this will vary according to the context. A person does not have to be an eloquent preacher. And some people are much better at their teaching in a private or one-on-one situation. And a person who is capable of teaching at a small rural congregation may not be able or have the qualifications to be able to teach at a large university congregation. So there is a certain relativity involved here, but still, the elder is a teacher, and so we want a person who is capable of teaching in a public way and in a more private way. Third, the kind of person that is wanted is a person capable of managing affairs. Because the elder is an overseer and is a steward, he must be able to manage the affairs of a group of people. And then fourth, We want a person who works well in a plural leadership, not one seeking individual authority. As we have pointed out, elders is commonly a plural word. And the dynamics of a plural leadership are quite different from an authoritarian or single leader situation. There are times when it's good to have one leader. In a military campaign, you want one general, not several generals giving different orders at different times. And if efficiency is what you want one leader. It's a lot more efficient to have one. But if you're looking for spiritual development, if you're looking for collective wisdom, then you want a plural leadership. And in a plural leadership, the strengths of one person become the strengths of all, and those strengths overcome the weaknesses of individuals. So there is a value in a plurality of elders. That may not be the most efficient way of doing things. Sometimes the elders' meetings are very long because each one has his own idea about how to approach things. So if you want efficiency, a bishop or a single pastor may be what you want. But I take it from the New Testament that God values some things higher than efficiency. And in spiritual growth and development, a plural leadership has many advantages. But those advantages require that the people be those who are willing to submit themselves to the group, so that one may have an individual opinion about something. But after the group makes a decision, then they come out and say, this is our decision. It may not have been what I wanted. You may not want to say that. But the plural group has reached a decision. And a person has to be one who is willing to work in that kind of situation and is not seeking his own will and his own way. Fifth, these names and the works that go with them require that a person be a leader. And as Matt was pointing out this morning, we recognize who the leaders in a congregation are. We know those whom we will follow. I've often, in speaking, sometimes not using his name where it was not known, but many of you will remember Ralph Nelson, who was an elder here for many years, and Georgia still with us. And I said, if Ralph Nelson asked this congregation to do something, simply because he said it, they would do it. He had that much respect from the congregation. He was that kind of leader. Well, some will be more outstanding in this qualification than others, but I think you see what I'm talking about, that we want the kind of person that people will follow. And as we are nominating those whom we want to be elders, we should keep in mind that we are saying that these are the persons whose judgment I will submit to. They may make a decision that I disagree with, but because of my respect for them, if it's a matter of opinion, I will follow them. If it's a scriptural matter, that's another question. But in most of the things that we have disputes about, it's not a scriptural reason. And so, finally, all of this is to say that you want a person who is an example, a good example. We don't want bad examples. We want good examples. Well, this list that I've given is certainly not comprehensive of the kind of person that we want. And it is not intended to neglect the qualifications that are listed in 1 Timothy 3 and Titus 1, but to expand on those qualities by mentioning what the names of elders tell us about the kind of person we want to choose. Hillcrest, from its beginning, has been led by good elders. These men have been and are now faithful, knowledgeable in the Scriptures, capable leaders and examples. And we want to choose men who will continue to be this kind of leaders. Well, this setting does not lend itself very well for questions and response. By my watch, it is actually time for the first bell to ring. Whether we will get bells or not, I do not know. But if one of the present elders or ministers would like to add some word to conclude the Bible class, there it is. I was almost on time. Usually I'm a little bit over time. But if one of the elders or ministers would like to add or conclude something here, we have about 5 minutes in which that can be done. But I have covered the material I wanted to cover.